Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game.
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni.
Throw game for the win.
Gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy.
Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Appreciate you being with us on this Wednesday. Glad to be along and back in the studio. Jim Coyle with you, as always, on this glorious day.
But I hope everybody doing well, enjoying this week. October, it has been crazy good. I hope that you're enjoying the weather and enjoying all that's going with it as we're coming here. Good to be back in the studio, kind of sorts. Good to be back. Not necessarily good when things aren't going well, but a lot of traveling and a whole bunch of other things. But Indiana football rolling, of course, after going out to Eugene and knocking off the number three Ducks. To finally cast aside any aspersions that people may have. But you know what? It's still not going to be enough. But that's okay. It doesn't matter. We'll hope that the program keeps rolling because, man, we're talking about rarefied air here. We're talking a shot, a legitimate direct path to the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis against Ohio State. Man, can you imagine that? Well, you might as well be imagining it because it's likely to happen with Indiana right now on a direct path. Even if they were to lose to, say, Penn State. I mean, you can throw anybody in there, really, because is Penn State the toughest game on the schedule? I don't know right now. After what happened with Northwestern, I don't even know how you even begin to talk about that. But it is what it is. And as crazy as it is, it's real, people. It is real.
And it's great to see. I'm sure that the fans are enjoying this. As you should, as hopefully we have things fixed there. Had some technical issues going on, man. It's been an issue the last few days. But there we go. Man, can you imagine being a part of this college football chatter, but being a serious part of it? Indiana is for real. They are legit national champion competitor. UCLA is scary right now. Is UCLA scarier than Penn State right now? One guy said 1% what? I'm not sure what that means reading the comments. I have no idea what that means. But man, what a shuffle in the Big Ten. Who'd have thunk it? We're asking, or I'm asking, if Penn State or if UCLA is better than Penn State. And meaning it. Now, do we see the same thing with Penn State after they roll the coaches? Does that change anything for Penn State? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to find out. And the thought that Kurt Cignetti would leave Indiana for Penn State? Yeah, he's from Pennsylvania, but you know what? I don't know that there's any Penn State ties other than they have a bunch of money and they have a bunch of resources. But as I've said many times before, I think Kurt Cignetti likes doing it where it hasn't been done. I think Kurt Cignetti likes doing what's not possible. And I think that that is why he will stay at Indiana. Now, Indiana's going to have to come up with some more money. Don't get me wrong. Without question. And soon. But those are champagne problems to have, as they say. Champagne problems to have. Did you ever imagine a day? No, you didn't, because it wasn't even within dreamable that we'd be talking about Indiana football in this manner. No. No. No one even dreamed of this. The undreamable dream. For Indiana fans. But it's here. And it's real. And it's pretty amazing to watch from the outside. Being in Oregon was an amazing thing. And I have to say, if I haven't said it enough, the Oregon people are the most amazing people I've ever encountered in sports. They were unbelievably welcoming and just genuinely nice as they could be. I mean, they were genuine. After the game, they were genuinely nice. It was amazing to see, but very nice to see in a realm, in a world where you don't see that kind of behavior. Man, it was incredible because doesn't matter if it was male or female, young or old, they were all just very congenial. So make sure I give them their flowers, man. Got to give them their flowers. They deserve it. But Indiana gets the flowers as well. Is right now they're playing with what is looked upon as one of the NFL's top draft picks, Fernando Mendoza. So you can forget about him being here another year. But that's okay. You'll have little bro in there. And things can change between now and then, as things always do. But right now, Mel Kiper, you've heard of him. He's got the number one pick to the New York Jets, taking Fernando Mendoza, the worst offense in the NFL. How about them apples? That's your reward for being the best, is going to the worst. Yeah. The Cleveland Browns, with the third pick, taking another quarterback in Dante Moore. Don't they currently have two top draft picks on their quarterback list? I mean, that's the story always for the Cleveland Browns. They rotate through more quarterbacks than the NFL does. Hey, we've got to take a break. Want to come back? Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette will be with us. Appreciate you being along for the ride on this Wednesday, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, back with more right after you hear from our favorite sponsors. Appreciate you for being with us today. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Dylan Sin joining me now. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, as always, Jim.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. It's a pleasure. How was your weekend? Where were you?
I took a rare weekend off. I went to a wedding of one of my best friends, got married in New Jersey. And so I was there. I was very excited to be with him, but I was also, of course, following all the action on my phone kind of during the reception as well. So I had a lot of fun doing that.
Oh yeah. Plenty of action going on, of course, with Purdue and Notre Dame and Indiana, of course, Indiana, a top 10 showdown out in Oregon, of which few to no one gave Indiana a shot at. And not only did they win the game, they won the game pretty convincingly, not necessarily by score, but they were pretty much in charge of this game from the get-go.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of the takeaway for me is, and I've been kind of emphasizing that, is that this wasn't any kind of fluke. They played better than Oregon did down to down for the entire game, right? Oregon had the one big play at the beginning where IU busted a coverage, and they had the pick six. And outside of that, they scored 6 points. And then for the most part, IU was able to move the ball. They had three long touchdown drives of 75 yards. They had a couple of really nice drives. They had a nice drive late in the first half to get into fringe field goal range, and they made the field goal. They were better in all three phases. Their success rate, which is a measure of kind of down to down how good you are, IU had a 41% offensive success rate. Oregon was at 25%. They outgained them. Oregon had the biggest play of the game with the pick six. Like, it's one of those things that usually turns a game that's relatively close, and IU won anyway. So it is one of those things where there was a way this game went where IU forced a couple of turnovers and Oregon got in a game state situation and couldn't come back. And it was still like, well, IU won, but were they the better team? Who knows? That was not the way this game went. IU was the better team on that field in Oregon's house, which I don't think I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought it would be a toss up at best. And IU went out there and did it. They proved everyone wrong, including me.
And the funny thing is, most people were saying, well, you know, if as long as they go out and keep it respectable, they don't get beat too bad and yada, yada. And now, not only did that not happen, they did the beating. And I guess you could say Oregon kept it respectable, which is kind of the shoes on the other foot, but that's the case, and it is legit. There is not a single thing now for any of the national pundits, any of the SEC zealots to say otherwise and it's not just Indiana. It's any of these teams that are not in their ilk, that are not in their bubble per se of what they're used to. Well, guess what? College football is no longer in that bubble. It's over, people. The bubble has burst. Let me say it again. The bubble has burst. You don't know who's going to be good. And I will tell you this. Kurt Cignetti is the reason why Indiana is the way it is, period. End of story. His brand of coaching, his coaches that he has with him, his system, what he's doing, I don't know that anybody else could have come in and done what he did, as if I'm speaking proper English, could have done what he did. but you know what I'm saying? I don't know anybody else could have done that, even in this era, because everybody has the same opportunities at other places now, Dylan, and nobody is doing it at the hardest place that it's ever been done at.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I kind of wrote on Monday or on Sunday after the game was that the transfer portal made what Kurt Cignetti did possible. right? Like he would not have been able to, even Kurt Cignetti would not have been able to do what he did without the transfer portal, because he brought in so many guys from James Madison with him, and then used those guys to kind of bring in other people who were interested. That's why Fernando Mendoza is here, because they were good last year, right? And so he wouldn't have been able to do what he did without the transfer portal, but he is the only one who has taken the transfer portal to its logical conclusion, which is that you can build a national championship contender with it, and with great evaluation and great attention to detail. And he was able to do it. No one else has been able to do that. The closest thing, and I've kind of been coming back to this, the closest that anyone has come is Florida State in 2023. That now they had a much higher level of high school recruiting, but they still were very, very portal heavy. And they went 13-0 and were one of the best four teams in the country that year, and got stubbed from the playoff in favor of Alabama because their quarterback got hurt, which is still, to me, a travesty, but we don't need to get into that right now. But that's the closest anyone has come, and that was at Florida State, right? This is Indiana. This is the team that had never even come close to doing this. So, yeah, it is to me, the best coaching job we've seen since I've been watching college football, frankly. It is remarkable what he's been able to do. This season is going to be a wild ride now, because IU is a genuine top of the table contender in a way that I didn't really think was possible, frankly, and would not have been possible as recently as like 4 years ago.
And I hate to put the cart before the horse, but unless something crazy happens, they're going to the Big Ten championship game, and we're six games away, Dylan. We're only halfway through the season, and I can say that with confidence, because even if they were to lose to Penn State, they'd have to lose two games for that not to happen. And not to say this is not possible. I mean, hey, this is college football.
Well, that's not necessarily true. There are some tiebreaker scenarios. There are other one-loss teams than Oregon, right? Like USC could finish 8-1 in league play. Nebraska could finish 8-1. I'm not sure what the tiebreaker scenarios would be, because IU doesn't play either of those teams. So if they lost to Penn State and then there were several 8-1 teams, I'm not sure exactly how that would shake out. But yeah, it is they are in the driver's seat right now for a Big Ten championship berth. Like if the season ended today, they would be in. But you got to go win your games, right? Like that is the thing. And that is, we've seen teams all over the country do that over the last couple of years, is they're very, very good and they lose a game they shouldn't, and it kind of hurts them along the way. So IU has proven remarkable at avoiding that over the last couple of years. That has been one of Cignetti's superpowers, that he gets his team up to play every single game. They're always ready to go.
Dylan, yeah. But let's talk about something that I always bring up because it's real. This traveling across the country.
Yeah.
Kurt Cignetti is now two times shown how to go across the country, win your games, get your ass back on the bus, back on the plane, and get back home.
Yeah.
Go to town, kick ass, go home. And that's what they've done. And they've been able to successfully navigate that. Yeah. So that's impressive as well. So they're navigating a lot of things here. In making this happen. So to go out to Eugene to do that is special, because first of all, they had won 18 straight games. Dan Lanning was 22-1 as the head coach at Oregon. So lots of winning, lots of teams have come through there and failed, like Ohio State. So what Indiana just did is big time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that is one of Cignetti's superpowers, that he is able to get his team up no matter – it seems like he is able to get his team up to play regardless of who they're playing, which is really impressive. That is not something that every team does. There are teams who are extraordinarily talented, who can beat the best teams in the country, and then they go and they just play and tag everyone a lot. It happened several times over the last couple of years. That's why some of those SEC teams last year did not make. Alabama missed the playoff last year because it lost to a 6-6 Oklahoma team. So, like, it is something that Indiana has been really, really good at, is getting up for everybody and going out there and winning. You got to do it for six more games.
How about the fall, not of James Franklin, but of just a Penn State I mean, you're going from a team that was expected to compete for a national champion, a team that Heather Dinich, who is so anti-IU, it's funny, although she's an IU grad, she picked them to win the national championship.
I picked them. Hand up. I picked them to win the national championship before the season. I thought they were going to.
I'm not getting on. It's just how it's amazing that you can go from being a team that's being picked to win a national championship to one that's not even going to make a bowl. Well, I guess they'll make a bowl game probably.
Well, their next three games are at Iowa, Ohio State, and IU. And then they still have to play Nebraska later in the season. They have to win one of those. And right now, it doesn't seem like they're a team that is really capable of winning one of those games. Now, under a new coach, under an interim coach who they all seem to like, that Terry Smith is the interim coach. He's been there forever. He's an alumnus. They all seem to like him. Maybe they rally a little bit, right? Maybe they rally around the backup quarterback that it's there now that Drew Aller is out for the season, and they go on the road and beat Iowa, and suddenly they look formidable again. Maybe they do that. I don't know. But these last couple of games, they have just looked like a team that is uninterested. They don't want to be there. It's like the first half against UCLA, it was like, oh, we don't really care about this. In the second half, they made the furious comeback and fell short. And then against Northwestern, it was like, oh, we're done here. And that's like I've seen some people kind of shocked that Franklin got fired, considering like how good they've been the last couple of years. But he clearly had lost that team. He got fired for a 3-game losing streak. No. He got fired because the locker room was no longer responding to him. And when that happens, you have to go. You just have to go.
And well, you cannot ignore 4-21.
That is the thing. Like I understand why they did it. Like there are people nationally who are like, well, they're not going to get anyone better. He had them in the top 10 every year. Okay, I got it. Right. Like I understand the point you're making, but first of all, they were never going to win a national title with him, and that's a program that wants to win national titles and has the resources to do so. And second of all, he lost the locker room. If you have the money to get rid of him at that point, it's time to go. And it's possible that the next coach who they hire will not be as good as James Franklin. It's very possible. They might go 8-4 the next 3 years, but that doesn't mean it was the wrong decision to fire him. It's the same thing you say about IU basketball, right? Like if the guy is not the guy, you move on and then you find someone else. And then if that guy is not the guy, you move on and you find someone else until you find the guy. IU found the guy in football. I'm sure Penn State football can find a guy. So it's one of those things where, he had to go. He lost the locker room. And so maybe the locker room will come back now that he's gone. I don't know. But it was really, really bad there for the last couple of weeks.
You don't have Sig gush on players a lot, but Isaiah Jones needs to be gushed on.
Yeah, absolutely.
The entire defensive line that Indiana was able to re-put together, because that to me was their big, I've said this over and over. That was my biggest question mark for this entire team.
The defensive tackles, you lose a draft pick in CJ West, who was fantastic for you. You lose James Carpenter, who is solid as they come. And it's like, okay, that's one of the most important positions in football is right up the middle. Especially in the Big Ten, where their teams are going to try to run at you right up the middle. Okay, how good are you going to be? And they ran Tyreek Tucker and Mario Landino and Jose Wheeler in there. Haven't missed a beat. And those linebackers are fantastic. And that front seven is nasty, nasty. It is really, really good and had Oregon in real trouble for most of that game. Like they have good players. They are well coached. And there is a great scheme in place. It is really impressive.
Indiana has had two games against top 10 teams. They have 13 sacks in those two games.
Oh, boy.
Like 13.
Oregon had given up one. I keep coming back to this. Oregon had given up one sack the entire season. Aiden Fisher by himself had more sacks than Oregon had given up all season.
Yeah. It's just.
Remarkable. Remarkable. And a lot of it is. A lot of it is really good players, and a lot of it is scheme.
Is it a bigger scare for IU to try to hold on to Kurt Cignetti? Not that he's not the most important, the head of the snake. He is. Or Brian Haynes. Which is a bigger danger of being taken away?
I think it's Haynes because there's certainly places. Like, I'm sure everyone on that staff wants to be a head coach someday. Or maybe Brian Haynes is fine being a defensive coordinator. My guess is not. Every one of these guys is a hyper-competitive dude. They all want to be head coaches at some point. They all want to run their own show. And like Cignetti, you can just give him an enormous raise and maybe he sticks around, right? Haynes, eventually, you can make him the highest paid coordinator in the country, but is that going to be enough? Because, you know, eventually you want to run your own show. The same with Mike Shanahan, right? And we saw that last offseason. Now, you can and should give both of those guys raises and enormous ones to get them to stick around again after they gave them enormous raises last offseason. But eventually they're going to want to run their own show. And there's just no way around that. And you just hope that, first of all, say Cignetti's eye can for coaching can bring in someone who can do just as well. And hopefully maybe that person is on staff and they've trained someone who can take over for them. Because Shanahan and Haynes especially, that's the best defensive coordinator in the country. Like, you can say what you want about Jim Knowles, and he was great at Ohio State and all that, and he went to Penn State for $3 million. Okay. But Brian Haynes is really, really good at what he does. He talked a lot. He talked a lot going into that Oregon game, and he backed up everything that he said. Really impressive work. And there are going to be some pretty high-level programs wanting him to be their head coach this offseason. So we'll see. Even if IU gives him an enormous raise and tries to make him the highest paid coordinator in the country, I don't know if he'll be able to keep him. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, he's up there right now, but he's not at the top. I mean, no. I know alone the defensive coordinator, ironically, at Penn State, I think, is the highest
highest paid coordinator ever in college football. They poached him from Ohio State after he led Ohio State to a national championship, to be fair. And their defense has not been very good this year. And so, like, and that's always been kind of the knock on Jim Knowles at Penn State, is that he takes a couple of years to put his system in place. And so he's probably not going to get a second year at Penn State, frankly. So we'll have to see what becomes of him. He's a little bit older. Maybe he just retires. But, yeah, like, even at Ohio State, they hired him in 2022 away from Oklahoma. That 2022 Ohio State team got torched by Michigan in the horseshoe. And then by two years later, they were the best defense in the country. And so it takes a while for him to put his system in place, and Penn State is seeing that this year.
Yeah, and the money that's going to cost Penn State just to get rid of James Franklin and the entire regime is being reported by Todd McShay as being closer to, let's see, where was the number I saw? $105 million.
So it's interesting that, yes, it's a huge number. So the buyout is about $50 million, but the buyout is, for James Franklin personally, the buyout is $50 million, but it is spread throughout the life of the contract. So they don't owe him, like Jimbo Fisher for Texas A&M, when they fired him and they paid him $76 million, they had to pay him a lot of that up front. Like, immediately you owed him a significant chunk of that. James Franklin, the buyout is like, you owe him $8 million this year, and then you owe him $8 million next year, and then you owe him $8 million the year after that. And that's not nothing, but it's different than owing him $45 million up front, right? And so they're able to spread that out a little bit. So it's not quite as much as that sticker figure. It's still a ton of money. And then you have to pay a new coaching staff on top of that. And obviously they're going to try and get a coaching staff that's probably going to be among the three to five highest paid in the country. But it is a little bit less, at least, than the sticker price there. Although in the end it will be, yes, of course, over $100 million.
Crazy, crazy money, baby. Crazy money. Dylan Sid from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette with me. And we're back with plenty more here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Jim Coyle with you and joined by Dylan Sid from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. We were talking about the massive amount of buyout it's going to cost Penn State. And after firing James Franklin and his entire staff, which would be upwards of $100 million over the lifetime of the deal, but that's not even including paying what you're going to have to pay for a new staff to come in, with buyouts that you're going to have to pay, first of all, for them, then salaries you're going to have to pay for them. This is a $200 million deal overall at the end of the day.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that suggests to me that, like, they're probably going to try to take a big swing here, because,
well, what else can you have? Why else would you do
it? Right. Why else would you do it? If you're going to fire a coach who, we talked about this yet, it makes sense that he had to go. But if you fire a coach who won at least 11 games in three of the last 4 years or whatever it was, you better have a big swing in mind that you want to take. And so we'll have to see whether that's Matt Rhule or somebody else. I don't know, but they probably have a big swing in mind, and we'll see who that ends up being.
Any idea who that might be? I mean, you've got the highest paid defensive coordinator or highest paid coordinator on their staff as it is right now.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be Jim Knowles, first of all. I think they're not very happy with him right there. I don't think they would promote from within for this staff. The consensus opinion seems to be it's going to be Matt Rhule at Nebraska.
He has been nothing but under successful at Nebraska to me. Every time I see his name, I laugh because I'm like, really? You're going from a guy who has not gotten it done to a guy that has not gotten it done.
Nebraska might be in the playoff this year. Like they're sitting here at five. They're sitting here at 5-1. Have you checked their schedule?
Yeah, but
if you looked at their schedule, they haven't beaten anybody. But they might be in the playoff. Like Nebraska this year is what people tried to pretend Indiana was last year, which was like a team that was just getting by and beating a weak schedule, and that's why they got in. But Nebraska might actually do that this year. They play basically no one except USC the rest of the way. If they beat USC, they're going to go 11-1 and make the playoff. And then, okay, then you're hiring an alumnus who just took a team to the playoff in year three.
Yeah, but I don't think that there's any way a Penn State fan is going to look at that as someone who took somebody to the playoff just because they did it.
Sure.
That's like saying, well, North Carolina went to the NCAA tournament last year. Well, yeah, they did technically, but they only did because Bubba Cunningham, their athletics director, was the guy getting that done. Sure. Because he had a financial investment involved in it.
To me, I would find it odd because the thing with Matt Rhule is Matt Rhule is a very good program builder. That's what he does. He takes a program that is really struggling and he builds it into a winner. Not a big winner. He's never won a championship or anything like, or won a national championship or anything like that. But he takes teams that are really down and makes them much, much better. And that's not what Penn State needs.
Oh, frankly. This might be the best. What's the word I'm looking for?
Analogy.
Analogy. Yeah. Yes. Michael the Music Man says Matt Rhule is the Kevin James of the Big Ten. Ba-da-ba-da. Oh man, hold on. I think I've got. Where am I? You know, I'm supposed to have stuff for this. You know, ready to go. Where am I? Oh man. Never mind. Go ahead. Missed out on it.
Your sound effects were, yeah. Where's the
yeah, exactly.
Where's the keyboard?
Oh,
but yeah, like that is the name that you've heard bandied about. There you go. Yeah.
Thank you. No, thank you. Yes, exactly.
Matt Rhule is the name that you've seen. I did like that. Like if you're gonna be a DJ, like that's go ahead and do it. You know, like get into the flow of it there, Jim.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm trying, but wasn't quick enough on that one. But that's I just don't get. I just think I see Matt Rhule as not having gotten it done. Now, would that be different at a place like Penn State? I don't know. Maybe just new blood. Maybe I don't know. What's Matt Rhule known for, to being a defensive coach or offensive coach?
It's been so long since he was, he's the CEO, right? Like that.
Long since he's been good at anything. We don't remember.
Well, no, it's been so long since he was responsible for a side of the ball. Like that's, he is an ultimate CEO coach, right? Like he is a guy who is building a program. Like that's where he made his mark. He made Temple into a winner when they were terrible. He made Baylor into a winner when they had gone 1-11. And he has made Nebraska into a competent team after they were terrible for a decade, right? And so I wouldn't do it, but I wouldn't have fired Franklin to hire Matt Rhule because that to me just seems what Franklin did. Like the whole point of James Franklin is that he's a great program builder who is probably not going to get you over the top. Matt Rhule seems like the same thing to me, but the difference is that Matt Rhule is an alumnus who is really good friends with the athletic director. Like that, maybe that's the difference. You just wanted someone new in there because you were just tired of James Franklin's whole thing. If that's the case, okay. I wouldn't have spent whatever $100 million on firing him to do that, but sometimes you just need a change. the problem is, if it's not Matt Rhule, I don't know who it would be, frankly. There's not really like the like if it's not how, Matt Rhule.
How does Penn State not go after Kurt Cignetti with?
Well, yes, they will 100% go after Kurt.
No, Cignetti. I'm like asking. So
like they and, will. I don't think he'll take it. Like if it's my
I don't either. Here's my thought. It's because I don't think he takes it because he likes doing it where it hasn't been done, where he's been said it can't be done, where it should not be able to be done. I don't know that he has a relationship to Penn State. I know he's from Pittsburgh, but I haven't heard. I mean, he was a West Virginia guy.
Yeah.
Boom, right there. That's backyard brawl, baby. So although the resources, or I should say resources, I like how people when they say resources, the resources would be available would be mind-boggling. They would pay him, but of course, this is a guy who 2 years ago was making $600,000. That's still that's lottery money for you and I, but now he's making eight and soon to be ten million, and probably soon to be 12 million. To be honest with you.
Like he will like if he stays at IU, he will get another raise this offseason and probably be one of the three highest paid coaches in the country, would be my guess.
Have to be the highest paid coach in the country, and can the highest paid coach in the country be at Indiana?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to. I think probably this offseason ends with Kurt Cignetti being one of the three highest paid coaches in the country, along with Ryan Day and Kirby Smart. Like, I don't know if he ends up getting beyond those guys. He probably gets to par with those guys, whether he stays at Indiana or goes to Penn State, either way. But here's what I will say about the he wants to do it where it's never been done. The problem is with that is that he's already made this move, right? Like the move from Indiana to Penn State, he already did that when he went from Elon to James Madison. Like Elon was the Indiana of that conference and James Madison was the Penn State. And he already made that move. So he is a climber. And like maybe he's decided this is as high as he wants to climb and he can get to it as high as you can go at Indiana. Like maybe he's decided he can win at the highest level here. But that's not necessarily the case. He might look at Penn State and say, look, I'm 64 years old. He's going to be 65 soon. If he wants to win a national championship and do it before he's 70, maybe Penn State is a better option. I don't know. I don't know what's in his mind. I don't know what his priorities are. But it is. I think it's notable to say that when he was at Elon and he was building Elon from a team that was nothing to a contender in that conference, he went and beat James Madison. And then James Madison was like, hey, why don't you just come be our coach because we're the big dog in this conference. And he was like, okay. And I think that's notable. I think that is something that should be at least considered is that like he wants to be at the highest level possible. And maybe he thinks he can get to the highest level possible at Indiana. I don't know if that's the case, but it's something to monitor for sure.
Can you imagine the fact that we could put out a poll that would be legit and say, is Indiana more likely to win a national championship in basketball or football first?
It is a genuine question. Like I don't know the answer to it because this team this year genuinely could do it. It is not outside the realm of possibility. I think it's obviously still a long shot, but I think this team has the capability to do it just because of the amount of veteran talent they have on that team. It is a really, really well put together team.
Absolutely. And not only that, they have a squad that is it covers each position group. Yeah. And so we've seen that they can go into environments like Iowa and Oregon and win. So they won't have to worry about that if they were to make the playoffs, it would be,
at this point, they might have a home game in the playoffs.
They shouldn't be playing in the first round likely.
That's true.
If they make it to the Big Ten championship game because they're undefeated, they're going to. I think they get a top four seed.
Yeah, I guess that would be the question: is where does IU slide if they go 12-0 and lose to Ohio State in the title game? Where would
I think that they get the top four seed because that is what was being talked about with Oregon.
Yeah, probably. Probably. It would be. I would be hard pressed to think of, okay, who are going to be the because it would have to be four teams above you. If you assume Ohio State is one and the SEC champion is another one, who are the other two teams that are going to be above you? I would be hard pressed to think of them, unless like if Miami goes undefeated, that's probably one of them. And then it would be a toss up between IU and whoever loses the SEC championship game, probably. Maybe Texas Tech goes undefeated. I don't know. Well, we'd have to see.
We'll find out. College basketball preseason polls out, but we've seen what preseason polls mean in football, especially not as much for basketball. You have a little bit better understanding of what a team has, but you still don't know how good they're going to be, how well they're going to play. So preseason polls, you can take them with a grain of salt, but Purdue comes out on top. As no shock, it's just that's the easy thing to do is to put Purdue up there because you know what they have. You don't really know what everybody else has.
Yeah, I mean, they return as much production as anyone in the country. They return two guys, who one guy who wasn't All-American last year, one guy who probably should have been. It was snubbed, and so like that is a foundation on which to build. And you have the core three there, and then you bring in like that's what is kind of. What makes Purdue so interesting this year to me is that they return a core group of four starters, and then they added several Big Ten starter level players onto their roster. Like I think that Omer Mayer would start on a lot of Big Ten teams. I think their freshman who hasn't been talked about a ton, Anton West, I think he would start on a lot of Big Ten teams. Jack Benter is going to be a problem for them this year. Kid they got from North Florida, Liam Murphy, is 6'8" and probably going to shoot 45% from three. And then you bring back Daniel Jacobson, who did start for them last season and then got hurt in the second game of the year. He's back. You bring in Oscar Clough, who was the leading rebounder in the country last year. It's a lot of talent to add to a team that was already really good. I think that is kind of why Purdue makes sense. I voted them number one in the preseason. Significant pieces to an already really good team. And so, they fixed what seemed to be their biggest problem last year, which was the lack of size, right? They didn't have a guy to protect the rim or rebound consistently. And so they brought back Jacobson, who's seven. They brought in Clough, who's a really good rebounder. And so that's fixed. And so we'll have to see whether that ends up putting them over the top because they are as talented as anyone in the country.
Certainly added some pieces and added the right pieces with that kid from Israel, man. He's supposedly the real deal.
Yeah, and he might not even start for them, is the thing. Like, he's very, like, I've seen him in practice. He's very, very good. He is absolutely worth all the hype. I don't think he's going to start for them. He's going to come off the bench, and they're going to have to find minutes for him because they have three guards returning who started for a Sweet 16 team last year who they all think are very, very good. Like, he's going to have to take minutes from CJ Cox and Jakari Harris, both of whom they think are extremely good players. And so he is going to have to earn every minute he gets. I think he will. The most impressive thing to me about him is how physically ready he is. Like, he is a big, big guy for an 18-year-old. And he is not going to need to talk about adjustment to the college game or just how quickly he can kind of carve out a role in that backcourt rotation for them.
We'll see if this is the team that Matt Painter can take to the national championship because a lot of pressure on in West Lafayette for that with this team because it's just kind of seems like everything has been gearing in this direction. This is kind of like the last run with these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things where it seems like Painter does this every couple of years, right? They have a team where it's like, oh, this is the team. If they don't get it done this year, well, then it might be a little bit. And then they come back a couple of years later and there's an even better team. And like, yeah, you're not going to keep getting guys as good as Braden Smith and Zach Edey every year because those are national player of the year level players. You're not going to have a guy on the team like that every single year, more than likely. But I will say, even after Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer and Drake Coffin run leave, they're set up pretty well for the future too. Like that's to me, that's what makes Matt Painter so good. Is in there, they fit what they do, and they just kind of roll out the ball every year with a new group of dudes, and it just seems to work. He's really, really good at finding guys that fit what he does, and he has a role right now out there.
Well, we'll certainly find out. But then you've got Michigan that's going to be there, and with their recruiting, what they've been able to pull in, man, they're going to be right there. I don't know who I picked Michigan to win it, to win the Big Ten at least, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a top 10 team in the preseason. I think they're seventh in the poll. They brought in some really important pieces this offseason. The kid Yaxel from UAB, I think, like 6'8" point guard. He is a guy who they're really, really excited about and could be is being talked about as a Big Ten player of the year level player. So we'll have to see with Michigan. I think the Big Ten is actually relatively deep this year. The SEC and the depth of the Big 12. I think the Big Ten is really deep this year. I think you have Purdue, Michigan State, Illinois, Wisconsin, I think, is going to be there. I think Indiana is going to be pretty good. I think Iowa is going to be pretty good with McCollum there. I think Minnesota might be better than you expect, bringing in Nico Bedved, who made some interesting additions. So UCLA, I think, I think they're 12th in the preseason poll. They brought in Donovan Dent from New Mexico, who's a terrific player. So the Big Ten has some depth this year. I think it's going to be 10. You're going to make the tournament because that is a gauntlet you're going to have to get through.
Yeah, and I have no idea where to slot Indiana right now because they are a complete unknown as far as where they fit in this conference. It's not – I know what they have talent-wise. We know what to expect, but where they end up, that is an unknown.
Yeah. If you told me that before the season that they're going to finish eighth or ninth, I wouldn't be shocked by that, and I also think that would be a pretty good result because, first of all, that would get you in the NCAA tournament, I think, almost without question. And I think for a team that has so many new pieces to be able to survive that gauntlet and go 11-9 or 10-10 in league play, I would be perfectly happy to take that result right now, and I think you get in the tournament as an 8 or 9 seed and maybe see if you can win a game or two. And I think that would be a pretty good result for your one under Darren DeVries, especially considering that they had no one back when he took over the roster.
We'll certainly find out. Appreciate you, sir.
Absolutely, Jim. Always glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you, brother. Hey, lots more coming up. Kyle Nedrup joins us as well as Zach Browning later. Here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio, we're back with more after these messages.
You're looking for...
Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. I hope all is going well for you and your week is going well. You've made it to the midway point. I hope you're having fun and ready for the weekend. Is Indiana back home this weekend? And plenty of high school action going on. Kyle Nedrup from the Indy Star joins me now. Kyle,
doing well, Jim. How are you?
Good. Well. Just got back from Oregon, along a trip out there. But now we're in what, week 9 of the high school football season?
Yes, sir. Last week of the regular season, and the sectional draw is in the books, and we'll be, you know, it's go time.
Yeah, it certainly is, and looking forward to that. So what, as we get towards the end of the year, it doesn't have an effect on the postseason itself. So what are you looking forward to?
I mean, I'm actually doing kind of a different story this weekend on kind of going behind the scenes with the team and on Friday night. It should be fun. I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to, I think everybody at this point, at least I feel this way, you're kind of for a lot of teams, it's, can we finish out, not a lot of teams, but there's some teams trying to finish out an undefeated regular season, which is certainly meaningful. Some teams trying to wrap up conference titles or gain a share of a conference title, which is certainly meaningful as well. But yeah, I mean, but I think for a lot of teams too, you're just trying to get healthy. So you may have people, you know, if you don't know if a guy can go or not, you know, you're probably going to sit him out, you know, and try to, you know, get them healthy. Or if they have been sitting out, you may not want to risk, you know, putting them back in for this last regular season game, because the whole point is to try to make a run, you know, once the tournament starts. So, you know, I think there are a lot of teams. I mean, it feels like there's more teams than ever kind of battling key injuries to skill position players. Not everybody, and not everybody's hurt by any means, but there are definitely some key players out who have been out who, you know, teams may get back or may not. You know, Nolan Reese from Center Grove was one who, you know, leading rusher the first 3 weeks, and then he's out. Eric Moore said Friday he thinks he might be back this week, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely teams trying to finish out a special season. You know, Crown Point's going for their fourth consecutive undefeated regular season, excuse me, against Michigan City, which is very cool and kind of shows where their program has gone. You got, you know, Center, one of the big games I'm interested in is actually in Bloomington. Bloomington South plays Center Grove on Friday night. That's an old rivalry that those teams haven't played a lot in the last 20 years or so, but really interesting game. You know, Bloomington South is ranked second in 5A, really explosive offense. You know, Center Grove scores a 6A power going down there to play. So I will be intrigued with that outcome on Friday night. But other than that, I mean, there are some good games on Friday. But I, to be honest with you, I think everybody's kind of, you know, it's a fun Friday night of football, but everybody's kind of looking at what's after that for probably a large majority of people.
Well, a lot of people that'll be in town for the Indiana football can just do a doubleheader, do a Friday Saturday deal, high school and some college action as Indiana hosts Michigan State this weekend on Saturday. So that'll be and I know people like D'Angelo Pond's dad, he's going to high school games. He'll come in for a home game. He'll find a high school game to go to.
Yeah, I get texts or emails from people all the time saying, hey, what's a good game to watch this weekend or whatever. You know, like, you know, they may be in town for whatever reason, not necessarily always college game, but just looking for something to do. And so that would be a great one to go to if you're, you know, you'd be done by, you know, what, the game starts at 7, you're done by 9 or so, 9:30, and then you can do whatever else the rest of your night. But that would be a good one to hit. I think that'll be a good game. There's some intrigue, I think, because, like I said, these teams haven't played in a long time. It's a different type of game. You know, it's just a different game on the schedule. We haven't seen a lot in recent years. So I'll be curious on that one to see how it comes out. Warren Central Cathedral is another one. Warren plays at home against Cathedral on Friday. That's another good, you know, game. We used to see this game, I think, back probably 2010 to 14 or so. They played every year, and then they hadn't played again until last year. So that's been a very competitive series when they have played, and I think will be a good game on Friday night as well at Warren.
Yeah, it's amazing that we're talking about high school players taking off for games, but that's where the sport has gotten to as far as coaches being smarter with play and saving your guys for when you're really going to need them. But that's even trickled down from the college level to the high school level.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think it's, you know, you're not going to sit a healthy kid necessarily, but if there's any question, you know, or any nagging injury type of thing, I just don't know that you want to risk, you know, putting them out there. And also, it kind of helps your depth sometimes when you're able to. And you see it a lot during the season. Like, you know, you could probably run a kid 20 times or 25 times a night, but you don't want to do that just because what's that going to do to his mileage once we get to the real game, you know? So you do see schools, especially at the 6A level, and it's not all the time. You know, there are kids who get, you know, like Jaden Bigger, staff of Center Grove last week. He was coming off an injury. He ended up carrying 34 times against Lawrence North, but, you know, he had 249 yards, and they've been running through running backs like crazy this year, and he steps up and takes advantage of his chance. And so you do see higher carries sometimes, but I think a lot of coaches are like, man, if we can use, you know, Brownsburg has three different running backs that are all equally good, and they use them all, you know, relatively equally, and it kind of keeps everybody fresh, and it gives you a different look. And if you can do that, and you have talented players like that, you might as well use them. Decatur Central is the same way. They've got so many guys who share the wealth, and I think that helped them last year when they got to the tournament. You know, it's not just one or two guys. You know, they have five or six guys who carry the ball relatively equally. So I think that philosophy, you know, is something that is maybe a little bit different than it was 10 or 20 years ago.
Well, that plus you're getting guys ready. you never know when the next guy up that we hear all the time is going to become a reality. And these are guys that are going to be playing next year for a lot of these good
teams. Yeah, I mean, it's only a good thing, I think. You know, and then once you get down to the, and a lot of times you'll see too, like once we get down to these sectional games and beyond, you know, some of your best players are going to play both ways if they're not already, you know. For example, like Deacon King at Westfield last year, you know, and this year, you know, he's a defensive and offensive player, but you may not have him out there every play on defense in the regular season. You probably will if it's a game you have to win. Yeah, and we've, you know, there's been a lot of players like that over the years, you know, even, you know, even the very top, you know, the very top of 6A, some of those guys will play both ways when it comes down to it, just because you want your best athletes out there. Like, you know, a quarterback or running back will play safety, or, you know, cornerback, or, you know, Mark Zachary, for instance, last year, you know, he's a guy that, you know, played both ways. And if you can get those special athletes on the field, I think that's what you're probably going to want to do if you have to win the game. So that's not unusual either, is, you know, playing those guys both ways once the it's a do or die situation.
Absolutely. And as we get closer and closer to the playoffs, has teams maintained some separation, or do you still have intrigue at the top for some of these divisions? Yeah, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I do. I think there's a clear favorite in the South and the North in 6A. I think Brownsburg in the South and Carmel in the North are pretty clear. I mean, you could argue Crown Point. You know, you could argue Center Grove in the South. You could argue Westfield in the North because of what they've done. You could argue, you know, Lawrence North in the South, just because their offense is so dynamic and, you know, they can score on anybody. My question would be, if they run into Brownsburg, can they stop Brownsburg from doing whatever they want on offense? So, you know, that would be my question about them. Not as strong defensively. They lost so much talent from that side of the ball last year. So, but, you know, I think it's the fun part of 6A is, you know, there are only a handful of teams, I think, that can actually go and win the title. But there, among those teams, there is some balance and some question going into these games. Like, you know, I, even with Carmel, as good as they've been, you know, we haven't seen them, you know, get to a place where, you know, they have used to be, you know, they haven't been a sectional champion even in 5 years, which is really kind of shocking when you think about it. But they're a traditional power that just hasn't been where they have been. So there is some question how they, you know, how they play in a game, if they play Westfield again, or, you know, in their sectional. And now I'm not remembering who they'll have. I think they play Harrison out of West Lafayette first, and then would probably play Westfield in the championship game, is how it works out. So, you know, once they get to that game, how will they, you know, how will they fare? You know, we don't know that for sure. They've been so good, though. I kind of think they're, you know, the favorite in the North. But yeah, in the other classes, man, I mean, if anybody beats New Pal, I mean, it's going to be some type of, you know, performance, because that's New Pal's been one of the most dominant teams in state history this year. I mean, they are just, they're just rolling everybody. But the one thing too with them, it's like, how Cathedral could see them in the championship game of the sectional, and that could be a state title game, really. So that will be fun. You know, 4A, I think, is, you know, Chittard looks like the best team, but I think there's some teams out there that could give them a game for sure, including Heritage Hills on the south side of the bracket, you know, including South Bend St. Joseph having a great year. Roncalli will still be tough in the sectionals. 4A is a good class. 3A is loaded, man. It's 3A's got, you know, Evansville Memorial's been great, but they will have to be Gibson Southern in the sectional, which teams are 1 and 2 in the state. So, you know, that will be a lot of fun. Cascade's having a great year. You know, so you go on down, and there are, you know, there are some definite favorites, but I think some teams that have a legitimate shot to get there as well, who maybe aren't the favorites that you always talk about.
Yeah, it's been amazing to watch these all play out. And is there a more balance this year between the North and the South?
In 6A?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's usually in the Indianapolis area without question. But outside of that, those divisions, I guess, is it most of the 6A teams usually around the Indianapolis area?
Yeah, although to your point, I mean, the North has been traditionally been weaker. Just even the, you know, partly because Carmel hasn't been quite as good here lately, and also you know, it's the South is just more of the Indianapolis area 6A teams are in the South, so that kind of creates a different weight of power, I would say, because of that. But if you look at it, this, yeah, and I think this has kind of been changing, last kind of created more balance. They haven't been able to break through and win a 6A title, but they've been close to doing it. So that's helped shift things a bit in the North. And then I think Carmel, obviously, this year is going to shift it even more. And, you know, Fishers is really good. They're in the North. I think Fort Wayne Carroll is pretty good. You know, they're going to be a factor, I think, this year. And they're only 5-3, but they've been ramping up their schedule to play some tougher teams. So they're another team to look out for. And then I mentioned Crown Point already. So there is, I think, and Penn, you know, Penn, we don't know. They're 8-0. They haven't really played a lot of teams that we can compare against, but, you know, they're having a good year also. So there is, I think, a little bit more balance. The one class that has been really lopsided is 4A. You know, once you get to the state championship, the South representative has really dominated the North. And I don't know if that will change this year or not. East Noble in the North is good again. You know, Leo, Mishawaka, some of those teams. But, man, the South team has just been really much stronger. You know, I can't remember the exact number, but I think the South representative in 4A has won like 17 of the last 20 or something like that. So that class has been a little bit more lopsided than the others.
Well, it's fun to see because you've got the pockets of communities, whether it's Evansville or Fort Wayne, that always has good programs, and it brings the state. It's great to see the competition in the from across the state.
Yeah, and I think the class that's really interesting this year is 1A. I know we don't talk a lot about 1A, but there is so much balance. That number one spot is shifting like every week almost, and the rankings that I put together and I get from our writers around the state every, you know, put those together on Monday. It's USA Today Network Indiana state poll, and it's shifted almost. I think maybe this week was the only week it had. In Springs Valley, the home of Larry Bird there is on top this week. Yeah. They're 8-0, and they're a number one. But there's a lot of, you know, Providence, the defending champs, they've been getting a lot of votes. They're ranked fourth. North Judson, which has been a powerhouse team in the North, is second. And North Decatur, which has been really good as well. They've been one at different times. So a lot of different teams, which I think is fun. I think that'll be, you know, sometimes you see 1A kind of get dominated by one team, but that doesn't seem to be the case this year.
Well, it's always fun to see, man. What's up next for you?
A lot. We got a lot going on right now. It's a busy time. I'll be doing some other sectional draw stuff here this week. But you ended up writing about David Bell today, last night, who retired from football. Such a great player that I really enjoyed covering for 4 years, you know, basketball and football. So I wrote a little bit about him. You can check that out. That's out now. Kai McGregor got eligibility at Fisher. That's another story that's just came out last night. His eligibility was overturned. And among other things, those stories came out yesterday, and then a lot of other football content to come.
Make sure you're keeping up with Cal Nedrip. He's got tons of it. Appreciate you, sir.
All right, Jim. Take care.
Absolutely. Hey, we've got more to come here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Zach Browning yet to join us. And I'm looking at the college AP poll tracker. There are three voters that voted Indiana number one this week. One of those, Stephen Means from the Cleveland.com. I guess that's the name of it. Cleveland.com. I guess that's the name of that one. It's not the Cleveland Plain Dealer. But anyway, he's one of three. It's just amazing. I'm sitting here looking at this poll, and it's a football poll. And Indiana sitting in the number one slot over top of Ohio State. just to look at that is wild. Wild and wacky stuff, man. Hey, we've got lots more coming up. Thanks a lot for being with us. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, here on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Hope you're doing well. In the midst of James Franklin's firing at Penn State now looking at having one of the best recruiting classes in the country, if not the best. But now they're seeing those guys go by the wayside as guys like Kim Onspell said Friday night he wasn't fully committed to Penn State any longer. And then Franklin got fired on Sunday. So the 2027 standout from McKeesport, Pennsylvania, reopened up his recruitment completely. Georgia's been an aggressor there, and you have all the normal names, the usual suspects, but they have tons of guys that are available for the pickings, I guess you'd say. And there will be going after them, especially when you don't know who the coach is, who the coach is going to be. But none of that matters at the moment unless they sign with somebody, because it's just everything is always fluid in this. I should call it this business now, because it is just that. It's a business now. And it is that. So we'll see how that falls out for Penn State. Do they just lose a coach, or do they lose their recruits? You know, don't feel sorry for Penn State. It's not like they're going to go away. They have what they have, and that is a program that is built from the bottom up. Now, they're going to have to rebuild it. They've got to have the right guy. I mean, if you've seen anything in college football, you see that you've got to have the right coaches. Zach Browning joins us now from thehoosier.com. Zach, you keep talking while I do something here, but how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Jim. You know, Wednesday, it's October. It's not 40 degrees yet here in Bloomington in October, which is kind of weird. This might be a short-lived Halloween type of situation we got going on this year. It's kind of interesting in that sense. Obviously, Indiana football is rolling. They're 6-0. Indiana basketball starts this kind of exhibition slate. It's an earlier exhibition slate this year than it was or has been really for the last couple of years for IU. Obviously, IU getting Marion this Friday. Michigan State on Saturday. It's homecoming. I'm curious to know how many watching are coming back into town for homecoming this weekend. I mean, I think it'll be a pretty sizable crowd. I know that there is going to be a lot of fan interest in Indiana. Obviously, I think the last home game was Illinois, and that was what, September 21st or something like that. It's been almost a month since Indiana has been home for a football game, so I think this will be an interesting contest. I think this will be an interesting crowd. I think we're going to see a lot of people that have been restless a little bit and haven't necessarily been able to go out and watch an IU football game in a while. So I think it'll be interesting to see the crowd, the turnout, the kind of rambunctiousness of said crowd. I think it'll be a really, really good turnout for this homecoming game. I'm not sure what Jimmy wants me to keep talking about.
Oh, my bad. I didn't have my stuff added back in it. There. But, yeah, just a huge win coming off of this past weekend out in Oregon as Indiana travels to knock off the number 3 Oregon Ducks and just pretty much stick their foot right in the college football national champion talk, which, yeah, that's amazing. Even though we keep talking about how this is amazing and that is amazing, it never ceases to amaze us.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you would have said even at the beginning of the year that IU probably would go into Oregon and would come out of this, at least Illinois, Iowa, and Oregon stretch 3-0 and 6-0 on the season, I'm not sure how many people would have agreed or believed you. Entering the year, a lot of the conversation was maybe the ceiling for IU is 10-2 with 2 losses on the road to Oregon and to Penn State. And now the talk about IU is 12-0, of course, in the Big Ten Championship, potentially the number 1 overall seed in the college football playoff if you beat Ohio State, who is the presumed team that Indiana would have to play in the Big Ten Championship. So it's crazy the difference that not only 22 months can make since Kirk Cignetti was hired, but the difference, you know, 3-4 months can make since the beginning of the 2025 season. I think there was some concern from Indiana fans, from people. Yes, they believed in Kurt Cincinnati. Yes, they believed in Indiana. But still, these are Indiana fans that saw that 2021 season. These are fans that probably had a little bit of that 2021 season in the back of their mind heading into this year. And Kurt Cincinnati, this Indiana team, have done everything in their power to not only dispel the fact that these are the 2021 Hoosiers, because they simply aren't. We've seen that so far in the football field. They're 6-0, the number three team in the country. But also the fact that this team is here to stay, and this team isn't a one-hit wonder. This team isn't going to have a good couple of seasons. This is a team that year in and year out will not only compete for college football playoff appearances, because that's very different than competing for actually college football national championships. And that's what this team looks like it's capable of doing. It doesn't look like a team that is going to sneak into the college football playoff as a 9, 10, 11, or 12 seed and be a double-digit, two-touchdown underdog in the first-round game that they play on the road somewhere in some 100,000-seat SEC stadium or in South Bend or something like that. This is a team that, at this point, Jim, and quite honestly, is more likely to host a first-round game or have a first-round bye than it is to go on the road somewhere in the first round, which is crazy to think about from where Indiana football was 22 months ago.
Yes, a first-round bye is a very, very, very possible for this team if they can continue on, if they roll on to a 12-0 finish to the regular season, which would put them in the Big Ten championship game against presumably Ohio State. That would also presumably give them a bye, because that's all the talk that you heard when it was Oregon. Now, does that talk remain when it's Indiana and not a big-time brand like Oregon? That will be yet to be seen, because I would be surprised if there are not a number of people who try to change that narrative, if since it's not Oregon or, you know, one of the big brand schools. But we'll have to see that play out.
Yeah, it's interesting if we look at the situation in the college football playoff. Obviously, the top four conference championships get those automatic bids into the playoff, but then it's straight seeded from there. So those top four power conference champions don't necessarily sit 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the rankings this year. They're straight seeding it this year. So something that's different, if I'm thinking out loud here, the winner of the Big Ten, whether that, and it looks most likely right now that that's going to be Ohio State or Big Ten, the winner of the seed, Miami looks like it's going to be the number two overall seed. You'd presume that the SEC champion, which looks like it could be Ole Miss, maybe Texas A&M, whoever wins that conference championship will likely be the three seed. Then if Texas Tech runs the table in the Big 12 and they're an undefeated conference champion, you probably have to give the four seed to Texas Tech. So if Indiana loses the conference championship, should they play in it, against Ohio State, I'd probably assume the five seed for Indiana, which would be hosting a Memphis or USF or somebody that sneaks in at that 12 seed. If Indiana loses the conference championship and Texas Tech also loses the conference championship, you can probably see Indiana as a four seed sneaking into that last bye. But then the conversation comes up, would you rather have the four seed or the five seed? Because if you're the four seed, you're off for 21 days with those 3 weeks of off weeks until you play the five seed, which is still going to be – you play the winner of the 5-12 matchup as the four seed. So it comes into a play where would you rather have 3 weeks off as the four seed, or would you rather be the five seed and play that first-round game, host that first-round game against the 12th seed, and then go on to the quarterfinals to play the four seed? So it kind of gets a little bit hairy there, a little bit kind of complicated there. But I'd say Indiana is, at this point, more likely – to get a bye than not get a bye, if that makes sense in the college football playoff. It's complicated. It's still a lot of stuff to play out, but that's where we're sitting right now.
And the mere fact that we're having that conversation is mind-boggling, but it is a reality. When last year Indiana fans were just going bonkers after over what was going on, and now it is even continuing to – the bar is being raised somehow. I don't know how, but it continues to rise, and now Indiana is a team that has looked to not only get one of those buys, but to compete for a national championship. And a year ago, that was not even a thought, but now it is. And I've got to say that, man, I didn't see this coming. I knew that Indiana was a better team and going to be a better team, but I didn't realize that they were going to be one of the best. And as we continue to see college football leveled out at the top, and with Penn State's problems and with Indiana going to Oregon and with the SEC not really having an elite team, just a bunch of good ones. Maybe the Big Ten is like that too, and Indiana is the best of the Big Ten. We just don't know that yet.
Yeah, it's not an overstatement to say that Cincinnati and Indiana have completely flipped what college football is, because this is not something that would have happened in years past in college football. There wouldn't have been Sure, there were some seasons where you'd have a program come out of nowhere and have a really, really strong season like Indiana did last year. But none of that was ever really sustainable. This looks sustainable for Indiana. You talk about this not really being the expectation coming into the year. Internally, it probably was. But externally, I know I predicted 10-2 this year for IU with two losses to Oregon and Penn State on the road. I think a lot of people were around that 9-3, some even on the 8-4 mark, but 8-4 to 10-2, I think, was the prediction. And now Indiana's staring down the barrel of what they control their own destiny being a 12-0 season. They control their own destiny. They're probably going to be double-digit favorites in every single regular season game they play the rest of the year, which is bonkers to me. And I think what stands out is entering the season, you know, people thought Fernando Mendoza would be good. I don't think people thought Fernando Mendoza would be second or third, one of the top three players in Heisman voting through 6 weeks of the college football season, through six games for IU. Defensively, last season's defense was good. Everybody knows that. Everybody saw that. Last season's defense was really good. Even in those games against Ohio State and Notre Dame, the defense outperformed the offense in those games. But this season's defense is spectacular. This legitimately might be the best defense in the entire country, with the ability to put pressure on quarterbacks. Again, it's been beaten into the ground, but Oregon have allowed just one sack. The first play of the game was a sack for Mario. Everything good?
Yeah, I just did that just to see if that was your audio that's scratching a little
bit. Apologies.
Keep going.
But this defense, the way it can get pressure on the quarterback, the tackles for a loss, the turnovers, the interceptions, the having All-Americans at all three levels, and it's not even the All-Americans that we necessarily thought coming into the season. Mikhail Kamara has been good, but he hasn't been his dominant self. But that hasn't mattered because Mario Landino, Kellen Wyatt, Stephen Daly, Tyreek Tucker, those guys have stepped up and looked like all Big Ten caliber players. There's three linebackers in the Hoosiers linebacking room that have a legitimate case to be all Big Ten players here in Relijah Hardy and in Isaiah Jones. D'Angelo Pons, he speaks for himself. He's spectacular. Lou Moore's been awesome. I think this defense is still perhaps flying a little bit under the radar because Fernando Mendoza obviously gets a lot of the Heisman talks. Elijah Surratt's playing like one of the best receivers in the country. Omar Cooper's been awesome. And Roman Hemby and Kalon Black have dominated the run game, the pass game, or the offensive line game has been good. But this defense, man, this defense has been one of the best in the country, if not the best in the country this season.
Defensive line has been absolutely crazy. I mentioned in two games against two top 10 teams, they've recorded 13 sacks. 13 sacks against two teams in the top 10. That is nuts. And so it just shows how this defense has just come around and continue to get better.
And I think it's what Brian Haynes does. And this is why Brian Haynes will get some head coaching looks, maybe not this offseason, but soon. This is something where Brian Haynes has developed a scheme and a pattern of just dominance for IU.
No doubt about Drew.com with complete coverage of all things Indiana there with the On3 Network.
Thanks, Ray.
You betcha. Hey, man, and I can't thank each and every one of you, as always, as well. We're back tomorrow to do this again. Coach Griff will be on Dustin Schutte. Matt Taylor's will get ready for the Colts this weekend and see what else we can scare up. Also, maybe some of the guys from On Three, Andy Staples, maybe I get him on as after this huge win. And what now for the football season as the college season rolls on? What is college football going to do when Indiana just won't go away? They won't stop being a team that has to be reckoned with. Kurt Cignetti won't go away. Google him. Well, when you Google him, is he still the Indiana coach next year? That's going to be something. But, yeah, that'll be questions. But that's going to be questions over the next several weeks with programs like Florida potentially looking for a coach. You've got Penn State looking for a coach. Man, they're not the only ones either. A lot of talk out there. We'll see. We've got 6 weeks of the, well, more than that, really, but 6 weeks of the college season or football season left of games. Of course, there's a bye week in there for Indiana somewhere along the way. When does that happen? Coming up soon? No? I have to look at the calendar on that. But yeah, this defense of Indiana's is phenomenal. It is possibly the best defense in the country. It is done things that a lot of other defenses have not done. And we'll keep on watching it roll as now they get a chance to roll on through some teams. They played a very, very, very tough part of their schedule, the toughest three-game stretch of the year with games against Illinois, at Iowa, at Oregon. Now they get to possibly beat up on some teams like Michigan State and UCLA and maybe Maryland. Stack some stat points up. We'll find out. Hey, we're back tomorrow to do this again. Appreciate you for being with us. As always, until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on the Hoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.